Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Here in Ireland for over 40 years, that's four decades of trust, reliability and expertise. Visit Zurich.ie.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
Negotiations are underway in Geneva for a landmark UN treaty to tackle plastic pollution, but deep divisions remain over whether to cut production. Professor Richard Thompson, who identified microplastics over 20 years ago, has advised on banning microbeads in shower gels and single-use plastic bags. He's Professor of Marine Biology at the University of Plymouth and joins us now. Thank you for joining us on Drive Time this evening, Professor.
Well, thank you for having me.
You've said that microplastics are now found from the poles to the equator and in humans from the womb. What do you think is the most compelling evidence that plastic pollution is not just an environmental issue, but actually has a direct threat to our own, to human health?
Well, we've known actually for decades that many of the chemicals associated with plastics are potentially harmful. There's some 16,000 chemicals associated with plastic production, and we now know that 4,000 of those have the potential to be harmful, but very few of them are regulated. And so for that reason, it's going to be really important that the chemicals used in plastics are regulated as part of the treaty. Those chemicals are, of course, also present in some of the microplastics that you mentioned, but those microplastics also have the potential to present a physical hazard, a kind of particle toxicity, if you like, in addition to the issue of the presence of chemicals. And we've shown that that particle toxicity can result in harm to a wide range of creatures in laboratory experiments, can reduce the ability to grow and reproduce. And we now know, of course, there's widespread evidence of microplastic accumulation in humans across a range of tissues. Microplastics are in the air we breathe, the water we drink and the food we eat. So in a way, it's not surprising. What we've got in terms of health evidence of that particle toxicity, but don't forget, we've already explained the chemical toxicity, which is potentially costing, one estimate suggests, about $1.5 trillion every year in unnecessary hospital costs. But the microplastic particles, we've got growing evidence that they're associated with a range of diseases as well, including coronary heart disease and potentially diabetes.
And I'm sure a lot of research being done on the long-term health implications. I was shocked to see, Richard, that on average, each of us consumes up to 52,000 microplastic particles every year. How do they find their way into our food and into, you know, common household staples like tea bags and seafood, salt and sugar and things that, you know, we eat every day and consume every day?
I mean, there's a range of different pathways, and it's also important to realise that there's a lot of variation. I mean, some of those calculations about the quantities we consume are very back of envelope, and they're based on some kind of average, and exposure's going to depend on what you do and where you are, right? But if you think about it, I'm making it clear, and we've evidenced this in multiple settings. Microplastics are in the air we breathe, so it's hardly a surprise we're exposed to them. That dust that's in the air that contains synthetic particles is also settling on food as it's prepared, either in the home or in commercial settings. And so that's what clear route into food. We've also shown that microplastics are present in seafood as it's caught from the oceans, but that's relatively small, I'd say, compared to the pathway by the air. And then on top of all of that, it's also in the water that we drink. So there's a range of different ways that we're going to acquire microplastics into the human body.
Now, you're at the forefront of identifying microplastics and pushing for a ban on microbeads, which are commonly used or were commonly used in things like shower gels and single-use plastic bags. Has that happened now? Have we seen microbeads outlawed? And how essential are those steps and those drives forward in reducing single-use plastics, which can be so damaging?
It's a really good example of microbeads in cosmetics, and we've seen legislation in the UK and I think over 20 other countries. Not worldwide, there are some places that haven't implemented bans yet, but of course it becomes kind of almost the norm for industry to then move towards a cleaner practice. And the interesting thing there to me with the microbeads in cosmetics, since we've seen that ban in the UK and in the US and elsewhere, I haven't heard of a single consumer complaining that they can no longer scrub themselves with millions of small bits of plastic every morning. And why is that important? It's important because it demonstrates that that use of plastic that was inevitably escaping to the environment because they're so small was non-essential. Mm-hmm. And the essentiality concept is something that we're going to need to apply to a much wider range of plastics in order to make sure, because of all of these external costs, not the cost of buying the item, but the costs to the environment and human health, we can only really afford to use plastics that really bring a clear benefit. The microbeads are a classic example of something that didn't. So then we need to introduce legislation to prohibit things that aren't essential. And so, for the essential products, make sure they're safer and more sustainable.
Which brings us to why you're in Geneva for this landmark UN treaty that's taking place to tackle plastic pollution. I mean, what would be your ambition and what sort of goals should be set despite all these splits between, you know, big oil producing countries and others who are bearing the brunt, really, of plastic pollution?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're here because there was a resolution taken by 170 UN countries going back about 2.5 years that they should work towards a treaty to end plastic pollution. That was a really clear turning point that all of those countries were agreed there's a problem that we need to do something about. Now, the difficulty is in the detail of that, getting 170 countries to agree on the specifics of what to do. We've got over 100 countries that have got aligned with a really high ambition that would deliver an ambitious treaty to end plastic pollution. We've got a relatively small number that are taking a very low ambition status, and they tend to be the countries that feel they might be threatened, you know, commercially by the consequences of the treaty. And then we've got a lot in the middle that are undecided. Sometimes because they're relatively small nations with a small number of policy advisors and they've not got a clear picture. You know, there's misinformation coming from industry. There's the science that the scientists that I'm working with here, the independent science, if you like, are trying to bring to those countries. And we're organizing bilateral discussions with them to try and make sure that they've got the evidence they need to reach their own country's positions.
And all that up-to-date scientific information that is so critical now. Finally on this, Richard, do you believe a deal can be reached? Are you optimistic?
Absolutely, it can be reached. This is a treaty to end plastic pollution, not to end plastic production. You know, there are business opportunities here in first adopters to make safer and more sustainable plastics. The business risk is business as usual. So yes, we can do it. Whether or not the negotiators manage to reach an agreement is in their hands. I just hope they can come away from Geneva looking the next generation in the eye and saying they acted in good faith for the next generation and for the future of the planet.
Well, Professor Richard Thompson, we do appreciate you joining us from Geneva ahead of that landmark UN treaty. Thank you for that. And we will keep you posted, of course, on developments as to what happens over there.